Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. In today's podcast segment, I'd like to introduce Mr. George Waller. He is one of the co-founders of a leading cybersecurity company called Strikeforce Technologies, and they've come out with a very unique product, actually, to help further fortify the security of video conferencing calls. As we know, the remote workforce is not here to stay until next year. George, thank you for your time this morning, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Robbie. I truly appreciate it. And I want to thank all of your listeners for taking a few minutes out to hear what I have to talk about.
That just sounds awesome. I'm really excited about this podcast today. Now, we've looked up your bio, and we did a little bit of snooping on the web. We didn't do a background check or anything. But you seem to have a very deep and a rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us how you got started in cyber? I think in your bio, you have a degree in aeronautical engineering. So how did you make all these transitions to where you are today?
Sure. So I don't have a degree in aeronautical engineering. I studied aeronautical engineering. However, at the time, my parents got sick, and I needed to start working and help out around the house and help with them. But and by the way, as I always say, everything works out for the better, right? So, after college, I started working, and in college, I started working, and then which got me into a technical field, which I ended up working for several years. And a friend of mine owned a computer land, and I don't know if you remember those, Robbie, but that was one of the first franchisees. Do you remember them?
I think I do, actually, yeah.
They were one of the first franchisers of computer products. They had retail stores all over the U.S. And I was looking, and I was very fascinated with computers with a technical background. And he offered me a job working with them. And once I got there, I was hooked, and that was it. And then it was, I stayed with him for 5 years until he sold the place. Then I went on to a larger computer company that had more services versus just hardware sales and hardware servicing. Then we started to install networks, and, we were doing larger scale integrations. And then went to another company where I was actually involved in that company, and we were a software VAR evaluated reseller for a manufacturer out of California. And then I was working for an international a software development firm based out of New Jersey, but they had offices in India. And we were doing software development of products. And I met a gentleman, came in, wanted to build a product. He actually came in with five ideas. And he says, listen, you guys do software development. I have these five ideas. I looked at all five ideas, and I said, no. But what's that last one? That's very interesting. He said, well, I have this. I developed this whole concept of a what he called at the time out-of-band authentication. I was like, what's out-of-band? He said, well, imagine you want to log into your VPN, and you're at your house. Because back then in 1999 and 2000, cell phones were not really prevalent. And if you were going to log into your company from your house, you log into your VPN. And he said, so imagine you want to log into your VPN. You pull up your VPN client on your computer. You type in your username and password. You hit enter or login. And then 2 seconds later, your home phone would ring. And then you would put a secret PIN code in on the keypad of your home phone. And so what that did is over my VPN connection, I put my username and password, but I put my authorizing code over the telephony network, a completely separate network. And so that was – he invented the concept of what we now call out-of-band authentication. And he told me about it. I was so enamored with it. I said, I love it. Forget about us building it. I want to help you productize this. And I literally Within 2 weeks, I quit my job, and I helped raise some monies, and then we started Strikeforce, and that was a little over 20 years ago.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you.
Now,
yeah, and
you've been in business for...
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, you've been in business for 20 years or so. So how has the road been to where you're at today?
Well, the early road was like the cyclone roller coaster down in Coney Island, because it had some huge ups and it had some even bigger downs. And, there are books in my partners that one day we plan to sit down and write about our trials and tribulations. And the biggest issue we had was we were so far ahead of the curve. We had a telephone-based technology for authentication. However, back then, if you remember the year 2000, very few people had cell phones. And the ones that did, if you had a phone and you moved one foot, you would lose that call, because none of the cell phone companies, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and all the rest of them, they did not have strong tower reception. They didn't have a strong tower plan out there. So since there was very few towers, your reception was horrible. At best, it was horrible. So, and we have built a technology that relied on having strong cellular connection. So we were, as they say, we were about 10 years ahead of the curve. And we had to kind of wait it out, and proselytize that phones are going to be used for authentication for security purposes, and that the telephone companies are going to get much better at giving you a cell phone connection. And so it took about 8-10 years before the cell phone connections were really at the point where the industry would accept them as a way of saying, okay, I can now rely on this. Because no one questioned the security. The security of it was unparalleled. No one's, until then, what was your choice? An RSA token, and you had to carry this expensive token around with you that if the battery died, you couldn't get in, or if you didn't have your car keys with you, you couldn't log in. And and obviously we know today that token technology can easily be beat by a man-in-the-middle attack. Token technology is a broken technology. So there was some keeping the company alive while we were waiting for the telephone companies to build their systems was quite a challenge. But we persisted and we kept on building more and more technology. And that's when we came across our encryption technology for keystrokes. And we realized that after the first major hack of Target in 2005, which ultimately was a keylogging attack, we realized that antivirus products were, they were okay at best. I mean, face it, Robbie, just about every computer has, antivirus on it, but yet every day around the world, there are thousands and thousands of breaches. Well, how can that be? How can it be that there are so many breaches, but yet every company has antivirus? It's because antivirus can only stop what it knows about. It can't stop what it doesn't know about. And I don't care if you're talking about heuristics or behavioral or signature-based. The bottom line is the malware writers, the hackers, easily bypass antivirus software each and every day. That's how come there are these major breaches. We looked at that problem, and we looked at the essence of antivirus and the computers and saying, well, how is it that they can circumvent antivirus so easily? And the fact is that antivirus can only stop what it knows about. What we realized is that my partner, the same gentleman that built out-of-band authentication, and, he came from Bell Labs. He was, a scientist at Bell Labs. He was a scientist for Bell Corp, and he worked for CSC Corporation, who had contracts with the federal government, where he built voice encryptors that they used for 25 years. So he was a cryptologist by trade. And he said, we could actually help prevent this new strain of malware, which at the time was called keylogging, to stop it. And by changing the paradigm, he realized that instead of having reactive technology like antivirus that relied on the good guy knowing what the bad guy put out first, that we could proactively protect every keystroke in your on your computer in real time. So what we built is, what he invented was the industry's first keystroke encryption technology. So when you put our software on your computer, we encrypted from in the kernel of the operating system. So when you, I'll tell you something interesting. Most people don't know this, but so when you put your fingers on a keyboard and start typing, you're touching a plastic actuator. That plastic actuator creates electrical signal. That electrical signal creates binary code, zeros and ones. That binary code is then interpreted from binary code to clear text, ASCII clear text keystrokes. And then those clear text keystrokes are basically shuttled up a messenger or a data stack in the operating system up to the target application, whether you're using Word, Excel, or your VPN client. And the problem is that in that exchange, you have messenger filters, you have messenger services. So it's kind of like a relay race of processes that hand the strokes off to the next process. Well, the malware writers realized that they could easily hook that data stack and get every keystroke as it's traveling from the keyboard on up to Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, because no computer in the world encrypts data for data in transit between the keyboard and the program. Yes, they can encrypt a file at rest, or yes, they can encrypt data going across the internet, but data in transit doesn't start as data going across the internet. Data in transit starts at the keyboard when you touch that key, and it's in transit from the driver to the actual program itself, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, whatever, the browser. So what we did was he invented actually encrypting that keystroke. As soon as it's interpreted into a real key, we literally encrypt it at that point, and then we, rather than go up through the data stack where they could get a copy of it, even if it's encrypted, it's safe, but we built a second data stack to circumvent that, because we don't even want hackers getting their hands on your encrypted keystrokes. So it took us several years to build that, and we built that and introduced that to the world. We call that Guarded ID. And that, and then we built a mobile version, working with both Apple and Android, Google, for your mobile devices. So that's what we've been building and selling for years. We feel incredibly proud about these products because we invented two new technologies that, a lot of the world is using. I mean, our keystroke encryption, we've had people in over 140 countries buy our technology.
Congratulations.
So we're very excited about those.
Now, when you talk cryptography, that really gets me excited, because in my last book, I wrote a whole chapter just on cryptography for securing network lines of communications. But what gets me more excited is, what kind of mathematical algorithms have you used, if you're at liberty to say that, to help do the encryption?
We don't talk secret sauce. We don't share recipes. I apologize, but we just don't talk about the secret sauce.
Okay.
But it's a very interesting concept, We've put every keylogger we put against it, we prevented those keyloggers from grabbing the keystrokes, and that's the key part. No pun intended, using the word key, but a key element is that malware is always going to find its way onto your computer, and malware is going to grab those keystrokes. Today, if you look at what happened, literally two things that they want to do. They either want to ransomware your computer, or they want to be able to steal from it. So they either want to lock it down and force you to pay them, or they want to steal from it. They want to watch when you type in, if it's PII information, if it's PHI information, if it's healthcare information, if it's government secrets. I mean, there's no, everyone knows the hackers go after every type of a company and every type of consumer. you know, they are basically, they go after everyone because everyone has something worth, you know, whatever they type in has value to them. And especially if it's your credit card numbers or your CCV2 numbers, or it's PII information or PHI information, they sell that on the open market.
Right. No, because I really get into mathematical algorithms when it comes to encryption. It's kind of been like one of my passion areas, what to write about. But anyway, now, do you have, obviously your products are in, you said, over 140 countries, but do you have other employees or other offices in other countries as well, too, or you're just pretty much just based out of the U.S.?
Well, we are based out of the U.S., and we have channel partners, resellers, that are, we have channel partners in the U.S., obviously. We have them in Canada. We have them UK, and we have them in France. And we're looking to obviously take on more channel partners, especially in other countries. We've just been approached by a channel partner in Germany that's very interested in distributing our products. So, yeah, wherever channel partners are, and especially here in the U.S., because I look at there's plenty of opportunity to sell our technology, especially with the new stuff that we just invented. And, Ravi, that's where the conversation gets very exciting.
Yeah, well, now, who's your typical customer base? Seems like just about anybody or any size company can use these kinds of products that you have. Is there, like, a sweet spot for your industry that you're trying to focus on right now?
Well, we have channel partners that focus in, obviously, financial services and healthcare are, and government are three areas where, obviously, you know, encryption technologies, authentication technologies are highly needed, as well as they're regulated, right? And there are guidance, there are compliance requirements in all of those areas for, you know, two-factor authentication. We have the strongest of the two factors, but they all have guidance requirements or compliance requirements. So any organization, any type of business that has people, for example, dialing in remotely, we have, you know, there's nothing more convenient than your employees or your customers using what they already have, a phone, for the purposes of authentication. And that provides not only the strongest authentication, but you don't need to distribute some other technology. Utilize, what we did was we turned your phone into a personal two-factor authentication device. And we use it multiple ways. We use push messaging, where push notifications, where we can get a fingerprint if you're logging into your bank or you're authorizing a transaction or you're logging into your company or you're logging in just to get your email. So any types of, you know, any type of service or area where you want to make sure that the person coming in is truly that person, you should be performing two-factor authentication so not to let the an unwanted person in there. And that's really where our software shines from the authentication side. That's in our Protect ID authentication. But, you know, that's only one part of the battle, because you can have 40 authentication, you know, products protecting, you know, making sure that the bad guy don't get in. However, you can have data breaches all day long, because if you have malware on your endpoint computers that's watching your keystrokes, then I don't even need to break into your company and get to your databases. I'll just get all the data that all your everyone that's typing on the keyboard is typing. So that's why our two technologies go hand in glove. One stops the bad guy from getting into your network, and the second one protects the data that you're typing because antivirus just isn't cutting it any longer. You know, if you look at your top antivirus players, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, say who's the best. But, you know, people will swear it's Symantec. People swear it's McAfee. People swear it's Webroot. And you look at the different tech, you know, magazines, and they'll, you know, they all talk about their pros and cons. I don't care which one you're talking about, but the same bottom line applies to all of them. Each of your antivirus products today only know of about 20 million virus definitions that they have in their database, right? When every person turns on their computer in the morning, it dials up to the antivirus mothership and says, give me a list of all the bad stuff, right? And it keeps it locally on that system. So now before you do anything, it checks and says, hey, is this email bad? I won't, then the antivirus pop up and say, don't open it up because we quarantined it. Well, the concept of that was good for years. However, where it went awry and astray is that the antivirus manufacturers, and this is, by the way, and I'm not blaming them for this, but they just have no way of keeping up with the amount of malware that's being distributed. And because of that, it takes them like 28 days from the time they get their hands on a virus to they build the virus definition into their update. 28 days. That's a single one. Now, sure, they do multiple tracks. Do you know that the average antivirus product knows maybe 20, 22 million definitions? There were 600 million viruses put on the internet last year. Look at the disparity between 20 million that your software knows about, but there's 600 million out there. And each day there are more. So the problem is that the good guys like the Nortons and the McAfees and, you know, and all those guys, they just can't keep up with the sheer volume. They can't get their hands on enough bad stuff to build it in fast enough to protect you. That's the advantage that every hacker has over your antivirus product. That's why what we do is by encrypting proactively every keystroke, we don't stop keyloggers from getting on your system, but we stop them from being able to see what you type. So we render them useless. And it was that thinking, Robbie, that brought us to what I'm really excited to talk to you about, our latest innovations, our Safe VChat and Privacy Lock software.
Well, why don't you do a deeper dive into them, George? That's going to be my next question.
Sure.
I mean, I'm on your website right now, and you got like five. Yeah, why don't you just do a deeper dive into your five product lines, like the Privacy Lock, Safe VChat,
sure.
Protect ID, GERD.
Absolutely, I appreciate that. All right, so what your audience, what we're really excited to talk about is our latest two innovations. And you're right, we have three existing technologies out there. We have, as I said earlier, we have an authentication technology. We're the world's leading developer of out-of-band authentication. We're the inventors. We're also the patent holders. We have multiple patents on it. Then we built – that's for protecting your network and access to your network. Then we built the keystroke encryption technology that protects everything you type on your keyboard, and it prevents malware from taking keystrokes or screenshots of what you have up on your screen. Then we took that technology and we transferred it down into mobile. And on mobile, we call it Mobile Trust. And we have it for both Apple and Android. And we provide it an encrypted keyboard so that anything that you're typing on your mobile device is protected. We also on the mobile give you a couple more things like a password vault, and a two-factor authentication token, an Oath Client token. So we do that for mobile. So that's been our mainstay of products for the longest of time. Now, COVID opened up a big opportunity for us. When COVID hit, we, like all our just about every other company, everyone started working from their home. And we started working. And we were all, talking every day, all the programmers, we were doing video chatting every day. We were using Skype. We were using WebEx. We were using Meet Me Now. We were using that one with the Z word, Zoom. And we were using every one of them. And we just didn't feel safe or secure with any of them. Now, one of the biggest reasons why I say that is, because we're a public company, so we're talking, maybe we're on conversations with talking about intellectual property, right? Non-public information. Maybe we're talking trade secrets with our lawyers about patents. Maybe we're on with customers talking about information that's privy only to them, that if we were there in their office, they would be, you know, letting us know what they want to protect and why and where their vulnerabilities are, assessing their vulnerabilities. But now you're doing all this stuff over video conferencing. And we're like, wow, we're doing all this over video conferencing. You know, how safe is video conferencing? So my CTO started looking at all of them and realized that he said, oh, my God, each one is more vulnerable than the next one. We got to stop using video conferencing. They're completely vulnerable. And I was like, oh, you're kidding. What's going on? He said, well, look at this. And he started showing me all, and the rest of the team all the vulnerabilities. And we were like, my God, we can't use video conferencing for us or our clients anymore, at least the commercially available ones. So he said, you know what? I'm going to actually build one. And Robbie, that's the best decision we ever made. And I'll tell you why. Because what we do is we're a cybersecurity company. We have been for 20 years. And when you look at all the other video conferencing systems, there's not a single one of them that is a cybersecurity company. WebEx is not a cybersecurity company, okay?
Right.
MeetMeNow is not a cybersecurity company, you know, dedicated. I mean, Microsoft with Teams, yeah, they have a cybersecurity division, but, you know, with their antivirus, but that kind of went by the wayside. So they're not really a cybersecurity company. Cisco with WebEx isn't a cybersecurity company. And then you got, you know, BlueJeans and Verizon. Well, they're not a cybersecurity company. And Zoho and, you know, LogMeIn. None of these are cybersecurity companies, but yet they all have a platform. Now, I understand what they did. They were in the business of video conferencing. They built up a technology that will allow you to see and hear the other person. Hats off to them. But what they never did was they never looked at the security of that. When we looked at it, we saw a dam with a billion holes in it, and some of them were the size of like Mack trucks, and the water was just flowing out. We were like, oh my God, you know, someone's got to do something to protect all those people that are using video conferencing. So my CTO said, you know what, we're going to build something so that when we talk to our clients, we're going to assure them that everything that they share with us is safe. And we're going to build the solution. So then what we do is we built it for not only us and using it. We built it originally for us to use with our clients. Then we realized that, you know what, we have to share this with the world. And so then we started developing it so that it could be more than just, you know, a platform that could be just more than us with a client, where it could truly be a commercialized product and have millions of clients using it at the same time. So what we did, Robbie, is we started looking at it and say, all right, what's the first thing that it needs? Well, the first thing that it needs is, yeah, you got to have encrypted audio and you got to have encrypted video. You also need to make available endpoint encryption. Those things are given. There shouldn't even be a question. And by the way, there's still many systems that don't even have that. Then what we realized is that one of the biggest problems that you hear about every day are companies like Zoom, where people are Zoom bombing, getting in on conferences. It's because those companies never looked at conferencing and said, well, we got to probably, you know, we got to make sure that if Robbie adds George to a meeting, that only George can get into it and not anyone else. No video conferencing solution out there ever looked at the security side of it and said, you know what, if Robbie adds George, you know, they never built it in a way that others couldn't automatically add themselves to it. So we looked at that and said, you know what? We will build a system that everybody does a two-factor authentication to get in. With our system, you will never get Zoom bombed. But Zoom bombing happens out there, although there's WebEx bombing, there's people getting onto all these conferences because no one out there in the market offers out a solution that authenticates with two-factor authentication each and every user. I mean, with Zoom, they give you one password that you share with everyone. Well, if I get that password, I can easily come into that conference. Well, you can't have that, especially when COVID hit. As everyone says, the new normal, right? They use this term, the new normal. Well, that new normal is that we're all using video conferencing to do just about everything today. So that new normal is, it's got to be secure because everyone's using it all day long. And I'm not talking about your Thanksgiving parties where you and your family, you know, you're all going to sit and watch and talk to each other, which they should be doing, right, using video conferencing. But I'm talking about where you're having a meeting, you're talking about, you're sharing whether it's a government secret, you're talking about PII information, you talk about PHI information, you talk about public information, you know, the secretive stuff, that data is too easily stolen on video conferencing today. So the first thing that we want to do is we want to put in strong authentication. And we did that. And we're the only technology, we're the only video conferencing solution out there that has two-factor authentication for everyone. And we call that product Safe VChat, like Safe Video Chat. We're in beta right now. We're just going to starting December 1. We're just going to production, to live. And we invite people to contact us, and we'll let them use our system right now for free and test it out. And we've got people testing it, and they are absolutely loving it because they know that when they get on that conference, no one else can get in on it. Now they can share their secrets. They can discuss information. I talked to some of the biggest computer companies, Robbie, in the world, and they were sharing with me that they actually went backwards in technology. They only share stuff in email, and if it's important, they only do phone calls. They no longer use products like WebEx and others. And these are some of the biggest computer companies in the world said to us, George, the minute you guys go to production, we're going to trial it, and then we like it 30 days, we're going to use it. And they're talking tens of thousands of people. And so we're going to be starting to put them up next week, in 2 weeks when we go to production. So, you know, companies are very concerned about this because data is being stolen all over the place. The other thing that our CTO, when looked into it, is so not only provide encrypted video, encrypted audio, endpoint encryption, two-factor authentication, right there, those things put us far ahead of every company out there on the market. No one has that alone but us. But then what we did was we started looking at the real vulnerabilities, additional vulnerabilities, which no other company can address. And here's what they are. Your video camera, your microphone, your audio out speakers. So what happens is that when you're in a video conference, yes, data is encrypted from, let's say, from my computer over there. However, the data, the audio that goes into my computer, malware can steal that whole stream, the video conference stream. Malware can steal the audio, my microphone stream. Malware can steal the audio out, so that if you're speaking to me on a conference telling me something confidential, well, that could be stolen by malware. And people don't even think about this. Well, we looked into it and found that all of that is easily stolen, not just stolen, easily stolen. And I don't even want to share how easy it is to steal it, but it's quite easy to steal the entire data stream. So what we did was to enhance our Safe VChat, we built a second product, and we're calling that Privacy Lock. And what Privacy Lock does is it locks down your camera, it locks down your microphone, it locks down your audio out speakers, it locks down your clipboard, and it locks down your keyboard, so no one can see, hear, say, they don't see anything from your computer. So if you have malware on your computer and you have a video conference using our software, you are completely safe. And that's the key. And the other thing we want to do, Robbie, and what makes this really exciting, is now the Safety Chat is our video conferencing platform. We've made it more than competitive. It's at $12.95 a month for a licensed user, and we allow that user to. What's that?
Oh, that's very affordable.
Oh yeah, and what we did was we made it that, unlike Zoom and others, you could have a single license and have multiple meetings at the same time. With Zoom and others, you have to pay for multiple licenses. We don't believe you should have to do that. And we allow you to have as many participants as you want in a conference. With Zoom, you got to pay more to get more people in it. Not with us. It's $12.95 for that licensed user. We also have a mobile version of it, which we're very excited. We just submitted to Apple and Android on those. But what's really exciting about this is, so our Safety Chat it's an incredible, incredible video conferencing solution. It's quick. It's easy. Everyone authenticates in, so you know it's only the right people in there. But with our privacy lock, it protects all those devices on your computer itself. And that's important because not only are we protecting the data you're talking about, we're now protecting the data of anyone that's talking to you on the phone, that data can't get stolen. Because when you're in a video conference, that other person's talking, guess what? You're liable. If you have malware on your system, you're liable if that data gets stolen because that's, either PII or PHI information. So we're protecting that, but check out what we did. Not only does it protect Safety Chat, our solution, we made it as a standalone also. It protects every video conferencing solution. So you may take our Safety Chat, and you say, hey, I also want to get your privacy lock. It's $3 a month. And so for $15.95, you have the most secure system in the world. But guess what? You're not only going to use our system. People are going to invite you to their video conferencing systems because they want to invite you to a video conference. And you may be using a WebEx, or you may be using a Meet Me Now or a Join Me or a Zoho. Guess what? We now protect you even when you're on someone else's video conferencing solution. So our privacy lock is dual purpose. It protects your computer when you're on our solution, but it also protects your computer when you're on anyone else's solution. And the keyboard protection, as I said, what's really exciting about that protects you 24/7. Your keyboard is always being protected from keyloggers. There's always an anti-hooking technology running. There's a keystroke protection technology running. There's an anti-screen scraper that's always on, and an anti-clipboard scraper. So if they have malware that grabs your clipboard, because a lot of people will grab and copy their passwords, right, over, we won't allow them to steal any data typed into your keyboard. And by the way, those features don't have to be when you're just on video conferencing. Those features are protecting your computer all the time, regardless of, if you're using video conferencing or not. And then when you're on video conferencing, that's when the media protection comes on and protects your camera, microphone, and your speakers out.
Okay. Excellent. Wow. Now, George, you've talked about 2FA quite a bit, two-factor authentication, but from what I've been reading, from what I've been writing in white papers and articles, 2FA seems to be kind of out of the norm now. Now people want to go to multi-factor authentication, where there are three or more layers of authentication. But in that regard, there's a thing called the Zero Trust Framework, which I think it's a great methodology, but I think it's kind of an extreme where you basically just don't trust anybody or anything. Do you implement the Zero Trust Framework in your products, or do you have plans of doing that down the road if you can share that information?
Yeah, I mean, if you're working in, a federated environment, right, we already work in that type of environment today. We're already working in there. So you're already trusted. So if you've done a two-factor authentication, our system is SAML compliant, so that we work in a trusted environment, and we are constantly building a additional value and trust into everything that we build. So we're a big believer in zero trust, but we also realize that zero trust isn't everywhere, right? So we build the most secure technology to protect your device, because at the end of the day, you know, the hackers are going to go after the servers wherever they are. They're going to go after your endpoint wherever you are. I mean, you know, when you boil it all down, right? They want to go to where there's wealth of information. Those are the servers. And then they want to go after the endpoints. Why? Because who's at the endpoint? A person. And a person is the easiest chain to deceive trick, right? And then they're going to drop malware onto your system, and that malware is going to either lock down your computer and ransom it out, or that malware is going to profit by everything that they, you know, they'll watch you, you know, get your credentials for the server access, the VPN access, or they'll watch you put in healthcare information or financial information or PII information. We had there's a company, I can't tell you the industry, but I can tell you it's in financial services. I can't tell you who it is. But about a month ago, not even a month ago, they use our authentication. And the business closes up around 5 o'clock every day. And soon after, and they use our out-of-band authentication to protect their remote access. And so when their people logging in, they pull up their VPN client, they type in their username, password, they hit login, and 1 second later, their phone rings and they authenticate with fingerprint authentication into their VPN. And about 5:45, everyone, and especially now they're all working remotely, their 65 users, all their phones went off at the same exact time, asking them all to authenticate. Every one of them. And it kept on happening. Please authenticate. Please authenticate. All their phones were going off. So their IT group knew something was up. They called us. We looked into it. And at first they said, hey, guys, is there any bug in the software? Because our phones are going off every second. And we said, no, this thing is working perfectly. Let's take a look at it. And they shared their logs with us. Sure enough, it was a well-known hacking group out of an outside country that had an attack against this financial institution, and our technology prevented it from happening because no one, when the worker was sitting home either making dinner or they were in their car and their phone is going off, say, please authorize access. Well, you know, there's something going on there. And, you know, because you're not actually trying to come in. And they knew right then and there something was going on. And they asked us to look into it further. And then we showed them that, you know, there was this group coming in and trying to breach into their you know, behind into their organization, which could have been detrimental to them, because they're a financial service organization. And by the way, about 2 months ago, a similar thing happened with in a different industry with one of our customers. They had about, in that instance, there was a smaller number of the phones were going off, and hackers were trying to get in and stealing very specific type of information from these folks. So technology is just, you know, it's flawless in that perspective, is because it knows that, you know, you're either trying to get in or you're not, right? And that's why it's so important. And that's why, by the way, it's so important for our new safety chat, because, you know, if you're not in the system, you can't get into a video conference. You just can't get in. If you're not in the system, and only you, your phone's going to ring and ask you to authenticate in. If you're not in the system, you know, you're not going to get a phone call and you don't know a code to get in. So that's why it's so important. So in actuality, what we've done, Ravi, is we took our last, 20 years of building cybersecurity solutions, and when COVID hit and we built this new safe, we realized that the world needed a secure conferencing solution. Not only did we build something more secure than everything else in the world, we then started layering in our other technologies. That's what is going to differentiate us from your Zooms, from your WebExes, and from all the rest, because none of them were built from the ground up with security. None of them have the feature sets that we have, the security feature sets. Sure, they all have tons more features, blackboards and stuff like that. And we'll build that. All those things are on the build list. We want to build the core security side of it first, because at the end of the day, you got to get on and discuss information, right? So it's got to be secure. And now we're building all the nice little things, blur my backgrounds and, all the little additional things that people want. But the core is up there and it works it's flawlessly working, beautifully working. And the most important thing is it's secure. And then the fact that we're protecting everything on your computer by locking down your camera and your microphone, that's important today, Robbie. Very important.
Excellent. Well, another thing I want to ask you, I don't really use video conferencing. I'm not a huge fan of it because I like to keep meetings on the phone, or maybe just use FaceTime at maximum. That's maybe my idea of a video conference on my iPhone. Now, we all have heard of Zoom bombing, and I peruse news headlines every evening. I tweet out the major headlines. Zoom bombing, that's basically where a hacker can maybe, flash up a pornographic image of someone or something out during a meeting, or they can just dial in and listen. But what kind of information can exactly be stolen from a hacker, like from Zoom or another video conferencing system?
Well, it's a great question. So who's using it right now? Well, you've got doctors talking PHI information all day long with end users, right? We're all going to televisits now. So that's all personal health identifiable information. We have insurance companies where, portfolio managers, all these people are now talking financial services, but talking about your personal accounts. So all that PII information. You have government where, now in these days of COVID, they're all still doing remote access or remote meetings, right? People aren't just jumping on planes and getting together any longer. So what are they doing? They're sharing, government secrets. All that information is being shared over video conferencing. If it's, banking information, if it's insurance information, there's a ton of information that's all being shared over video conferencing because people are no longer having these meetings face-to-face anymore. So all this information is now coming across video conferencing and video conferences. And that's why it's so important to be able to protect all of that, because right now there is nothing. If you go to Zoom, intellectual property. So you're talking with your lawyers, you talk about, let's say, patents. What is intellectual property? If you talk with your bank or organization, banking systems are talking with corporate clients. There's financial and banking data. Let's say a company is a public company and they're talking about they're going to buy out another company, merger and acquisition. Well, that could affect stock price, hugely, right? Then obviously government and military secrets. Then there's employee data. HR people are now talking, HR-related, employee data over there. So, there's all this data from healthcare, employee data, corporate data, PII information, intellectual property, financial data, strategic data, military data. This is all stuff that we're using video conferencing for, And there's not a single video conferencing company out there protecting this but us.
Now, another question I want to ask you is COVID-19. Now, if you asked me 1 year ago, we heard about it happening in Wuhan and China, but I never ever thought that it would reach the level that it has today. Now, obviously, COVID-19 has been a huge, huge driver behind video conferencing, and especially now that the remote workforce is going to be probably more or less a permanent fixture now for the next couple of years. How do you think this industry is going to grow? Are we going to see it grow in leaps and bounds, or has it peaked, or is it going to have some ebbs and flows? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great question, by the way. I think it's going to grow substantially. So there are analyst groups that every year put out facts and figures about industry, verticals and technologies. Well, so in video conferencing, Global Market Insights, a very reputable large analyst group, in pre-COVID, in December of last year, of 19, they had said that video conferencing was poised to grow from 2.6 billion in 2019 to about 6.5 billion by the end of 2025. Just normal growth, but it was a very good growth part because more and more companies, more and more people using video conferencing. It hit. They went back and they reanalyzed their stats and their data, and they reforecasted it, and they changed it from going from 2.6 to like 6.5 to going from 2.6 to $50 to $60 billion. So 10 times their original forecasted numbers. They also showed that by the end of this decade, by the end of 2020, they estimate that more than 50% of the world's employees will be using video conferencing regularly. 50% of the world's employees. Like you said, the one thing that COVID and video conferences have showed us is that we have figured out how to do things remotely now, right, without having to travel. So that's why it is here to stay. So, certain things will come back, obviously. Travel industry, going to places and I feel, horrible. All these places were so devastated by this disease, and my heart goes out to them. And so, I'm excited about those industries coming back, because we need those industries. It's part of the fabric of the world's, the way the world works. So, but I don't think it's going to change it, at all. In fact, it's only going to grow. So they're saying 50 to 60 billion. I think it could even grow bigger, especially when you think about cybersecurity. Gartner put, global cybersecurity, they pinned it at, by 2022, at $133 billion industry. And Strikeforce is the only company in the world at the nexus point, at the convergence point of cybersecurity and video conferencing. We are the only company leading that effort at that convergence point, so which puts us at the convergence point of about a $200 billion industry. So it's just going to continue to grow.
Excellent. Well, now, human beings tend to be creatures of habit. Once we use one technology platform, we don't like to adopt another one. It's kind of like using Windows and all of a sudden going to Linux. Do companies typically rely on just one video conferencing platform? Yeah, I know Zoom's had their issues. So people have talked about WebEx, Microsoft Teams, Skype, so forth. Microsoft Teams now really I guess, one of the up-and-coming video conferencing tools. Do companies, from your knowledge, really only just use one tool, even despite all the security issues that they have, or do they use multiple versions of that?
It's another great question. And according to Get VoIP, and they did a survey the end of last year. They called it the State of Video Conferencing in 2020. 62% of companies actually use three or more different video conferencing services. 62%. And you know what happens? In a lot of these companies, yeah, you get your large companies where they standardize, people on WebEx, people on, MeetMe Now or JoinMe or Microsoft Teams. Although more people run away from Zoom and Teams than you can imagine, especially Teams. Just everyone I talk to, it crashed my computer. I've talked to so many people where Teams crash their computers. What happens is in a lot of these big companies, while some of them standardize, other ones, they let different, divisions or departments use what they're comfortable with, right? Because remember something, you're not getting video conferencing for everyone in your company. You're just getting it for the people that need to set up the meetings. Everyone in your company can join a meeting and it's free for them, right? Because they're being added to a meeting, but it's just, you're just paying for the people that need to have a license to actually create those meetings. And that's, in some companies it's 2, 3, 4 people. Some larger companies it could be, 1 or 2 people in sales, 1 or 2 people in marketing, maybe 1 or 2 people in accounting, maybe 1 in manufacturing, 1 in supply chain distribution. So, maybe they'll be doing 10, 20, 50 people in their whole company. They may have 10,000 people, and those 10,000 people will be asked to join conferences, and those people, you never pay for those. You're just paying for the people that are setting up the meetings. So because of the nature of that, companies typically say, all right, you know what? You get a new employee, a new manager. They're used to using Zoom. And when they come in, they bring in Zoom, right? You get a manager that's used to using Teams. Everyone in that department uses Teams, So it's kind of – and the other thing is there's no risk in using any of these solutions. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's no risk in money. Well, there's risk in it. Actually, let me back that up. The risk is, and I wasn't talking when I said there's no risk. It's whether you spend $15 for the month and you try Zoom, or you spend $15 and try Teams or WebEx, $15-$18 for the month. It's not a big outlay, right? So there's not a big risk. It's not like you're putting down $200,000 or $300,000. You're implementing an authentication system, and you're changing the whole way the company logs in. You're not doing any of that. You're just using an online platform to allow people to get together. That's what I meant by no risk. But the real risk is that the data that's exposed with all these companies, that's where the risk lies. So companies look at it like, if they're 15 or they're 15 or they're 15, what does it really matter? If Charlie is happy using one of them, let Charlie use what he wants to use. You're going to pay $15 anyway, right? Regardless, or $16 to whatever you're using, they're all in the same, relative price category, give or take a couple of bucks for the month. So most owners, they really don't look at that as a risk issue, But the risk is that no matter what you're using, if it's not Safety Chat, you use them with Privacy Lock, you're vulnerable. You're vulnerable for that data. And people got to realize that not only are they vulnerable for that data, what their own data, they're vulnerable for their clients. So if their brokers are wrong with people and they're doing portfolio management over video conferencing, that person that set up that meeting, they are liable for that data. And if there's a breach, excellent. They're liable for it. So they're having breaches all over the country right now. There's data being breached all over the company, all over the world right now with video conferencing, and people and companies don't even know how liable they are. It's just that people haven't put two to two together yet, because everyone's still stunned, in the in the cloud, you know, still partially stunned by COVID and what's it done to the world and, you know, and how we all have to operate differently. But there are data breaches now every second of every day. Every time you're on with a company, if you're sharing information and they didn't do two-factor authentication, guess what? That's against a HIPAA violation. That's against Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, compliance. That's against FFIEC compliance, right? If data is being exchanged and you didn't validate everyone coming in there with two-factor authentication, that's just like someone logged into your company remotely. If you didn't have compliance requirements in place, guess what? You're out of compliance. Your insurance company could say, hey, you know what? You weren't taking the measures you needed to protect that data while on a conference, and they could deny your claim. Every company out there is susceptible to this today. We're the only ones talking about it because we're the only ones that have the solutions, because we looked at it from that perspective, again, because we're a cybersecurity company. It's about how do we protect people and data. I mean, we have a saying in here, your data, your privacy is your business, but protecting it is ours.
Wow, I've never heard that one before. That's a good tagline. I like that one.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, you should probably register as a trademark, actually. Just joking.
We actually did.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I want to clarify, George, does Strikeforce, maybe I misunderstood you, do you offer a dedicated video conferencing platform like the Zooms and the Teams and the WebExes?
Do we offer a video? I guess I'm not sure what your question, what you actually mean by that.
You obviously offer the security solutions to go with these video conferencing tools. But maybe I got confused. I think you had mentioned also the video conferencing platform.
Our safety chat. So we are the two exciting things that we just came out with is our safety chat is the world's most secure video conferencing platform. And then separately, we are getting ready to introduce a product called Privacy Lock, which will lock down your camera, microphone, keyboard, clipboard, and speakers, regardless of which video conferencing solution you're using. We protect any and every video conferencing solution. So if you're using our SafeBeChat, then you're secure. If you're using WebEx, you're secure, where you're not today. If you're using Microsoft Teams, you're secure, more secure than if you're not using it. So we're offering out now two products. They're different. One is specifically a video conferencing solution that offers out more security and it forces everyone to do two-factor authentication for coming into it. And we have encrypted video, encrypted audio, endpoint encryption. So that's our Safe VChat video conferencing solution. And people can go to our website at safevchat.com and see more about it and sign up for free beta. They test it immediately. And then separately, we have, which comes out early in like mid-December, our Privacy Lock, which is our endpoint security that sits on your computer and protects and locks down your camera, locks down your keyboard. So your keyboard is locked down all the time, so malware can't see anything you type in. And that's just whenever you turn on your computer, we're protecting your keyboard from malware. But then when you're on a video conference, we're protecting your camera, microphone, and speakers.
Okay, excellent. My next question now, I know Zoom and these other video conferencing tools, they have, they've increased their levels of protection. But how really is it for a cyber attacker to kind of break into a video conferencing platform like the Zooms or the Microsoft Teams?
That's a fantastic question. So one of the things that hackers do, and it's actually quite easy, and the reason they made it easy is one of the biggest problems and why people don't like to use video conferencing solutions is, if I can use the word damn, that damn desktop client. I never know. I had so many of them on my computer. I never know. They're always saying updating, updating, updating. You know, reboot to update, update to reboot. And it's like I got dizzy. I didn't know which way it's coming and going. Is it updated? It's sometimes saying it's updated, but now it's still running the client. So what hackers realize is they write malware specifically looking for that Zoom client, specifically looking for that WebEx client, specifically looking for that Microsoft client, and they malface it, and they exploit it, and that's how they steal the video conferencing data. What we did, Robbie, is we built our solution. It's clientless. All you need is a browser. That's it. We used a newer protocol. We used WebRTC, real-time communications, and all you need is a browser. So when someone invites you to one of our conferences, you're going to get a link in an email, and in that email, it's also going to tell you when you go to the meeting, you got to authenticate, but and it'll tell you in that email how you authenticate, but that's it. You don't need to download any software because it's that software which all the hackers are exploiting. It's not the only one. It's not the only thing, but it's one of the main areas. That Zoom client is just open game for hackers. Your WebEx client is open season for hackers. Your Microsoft Teams client is open season for hackers. They have malware that just looks for those clients and exploits them in a second. And now they watch your whole video stream. We don't allow that. We built this clientless, which makes it so nice to use. The first time people go on, they're like, oh, my God, I didn't have to download anything. I didn't have to update anything. How nice is that? How easy is that? All you got to do is go to a link.
Wow. Now, you mentioned briefly about your pricing, and I think your pricing model is very, very affordable, especially to the SMB, you know, owners, you know, the mom-and-pop stores that are on a tight budget, obviously, with the times right now. How does your pricing compare with the competition? Sounds like you really don't have much competition, I think, given your space right now. Am I correct in that regard?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're the only secure video conferencing solution on the market, but there are video conferencing solutions, right? None of them are secure. So, you know, one would argue, well, you're still a video conferencing solution. So, you know, when you compare us to So what we did, Robbie, is we looked at the market and we said, all right, let's build a chart and what is everyone priced at, right? So you had your lowest of the lowest, which was about $10 a month. I mean, other than like your free ones that don't give you anything, right? But and there's only one or two of them. Your average one, so there's one. Is like one down at $11, then everything else seems to be hovering from $15 to $25 a month. We put our product, we priced Safety Chat out at $12.95 a month for a licensed user. And again, you don't got to pay for multiple licenses if you want to have multiple meetings at the same time. So not only is it, you know, so if you have two people that are, let's say, you want to have two meetings at the same time, you don't need to buy two licenses. It would assume you do. Now you're paying, they're charging $15. Now you're charging, you're paying $30 a month. With me, you're still paying $12.95. Two people are using it. So we priced it at the low end of the scale, especially in this economy. We wanted to make it affordable, knowing that companies are being, you know, they do have greater challenges in this COVID environment. So we priced it as low as we can, and we give you more security than every other company combined. Combined.
Wow, excellent. Well, it's making me want to get your products. Anyway,
Well, listen, we've been, our mission statement for 20 years, Ravi, has been to make the world a safer place for people to compute. And that has not changed. But 20 years ago, we said that we're going to make the world a safer place for people to compute. And that's all we do. That's all we do.
Excellent. I like that. Nice, simple tagline. Excellent. Now, as we approach the last part of our show here, I just want to touch on some issues that, will probably transpire in 2021, and it could have an impact on, video conferencing. The two big hot button, or three actually, I want to get into is one, the IoT, the Internet of Things. And that's kind of basically, where everything's all connected. I just wrote an ebook on that. It's up on Amazon right now. I just self-published it. George, I find the IoT to be a very scary proposition. I don't like the idea of having cars, all linked together, smart cars, smart refrigerators. I mean, I still drive an 03 Honda Civic analog instrumentation. I don't have a smart home or anything like that. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have a smart car or a smart home or anything like that?
No, I do not have a smart home. I think that, I do have a car a couple of years old. I know it does communicate via even when you're not in it, reporting, data back to the manufacturer. And by the way, and not that we're on this conference in, but my wife called me this morning and she said, my car is in the driveway dead. And I remember this happened like 7 months ago when I called the manufacturer. I said, the car's 2 years old. Maybe it's a battery. He said, no. But if you don't use it in a week, it'll die because it's communicating every day, even when you're not using it. And I was like, who's it talking to? He says, the service department, the manufacturer, and it's constantly reaching out and doing communications. And I like you, I'm like, I don't know if I want my car, talking to the manufacturer, but you can't shut it off. It's their car, right? It's built into the firmware, so it's not like I could shut something off. But now, because we haven't used it in like a week and a half, a couple weeks, it's now sitting in my driveway dead. The battery died because they communicate with it. And so there is, I think there does need to be some lines drawn on stuff like that. So I hear what you're saying. Although, let me tell you conversely, I talked to a couple of years ago, I was fortunate enough to sit down with one of the vice presidents of Intel of their IoT division. And he told me a story, and I was sitting there having lunch with him, and he told me, I was sitting with a couple of people, and I was out in San Francisco at this conference, and he was talking about IoT devices, and he said, he asked a question. He said, the water faucet in your house? I was like, yeah. So there was like four of us at the table. He said, guess how many manufacturers of water faucets make at least one water faucet with an IoT device in it. And I just shook my head. I said, what? And he said, yeah. What percentage do you think now make a water faucet with an IoT reader in there? I was like, I don't know, one, two? He said, nope. Someone else said 10. He said, nope. Someone else said 20. He said, nope. I was like, how many? He says 100%. I said, what? He said, yeah, not every water faucet has an IoT device in it, but 100%, Delta, Cola, every one of them have an IoT device, have at least one faucet with an IoT reader in there, communicator. Then he told me a story of he just came back from Chile, and because he had read that these Chilean miners had put IoT devices in drill bits. And I was just like, what? He said, yeah, I heard this. I had to fly out to Chile and meet with the drill bit manufacturer, and he went on site. And they were telling him that the devices, when they were just using their regular drill bits, you know, they wouldn't know when the device, its yield, had slipped below a threshold, because, you know, as you're drilling through, you know, rock and granite and stuff like that, it wears at different levels, right? So the drill bit manufacturer started putting IoT into their drill bits that started letting them know when their blades weren't sharp any longer and they needed to be pulled out and a new blade put in, and that one sent out for resharpening. And they had a 70% higher yield in the first week that they switched over to drill bits with IoT devices built into them. So that's, you know, it was like, you know, like I left lunch and I still think about it to today, you know. And then I remember when what was the IoT Mavi, or what was the malware that hit it a couple of years ago, the big one that started taking down all IoT, you know, started reading all the IoT servers. It began with an M. I forget the malware.
Stuxnet.
But what's that? No, not Stuxnet. These things, you know, so yeah, it really has to make you think about it with IoT, with, you know, communications. Like I see, like on one side, on the drill bit side, I said, wow, this is fantastic. You know, they have malware that could help, you know, the manufacturer, the drilling manufacturer, know when his drill bits are getting dull so that they can sharpen them. And then the person that's leasing them or buying them, that person can change it, right? So from that perspective, innovation is fantastic, you know, fantastic.
Wow. Excellent.
You know, but from the other side, you know, the other side of it is that, you know, you have this constant communication, like with a sink or a car. Mirai, that was it. Remember the Mirai botnet? And it was affecting all IoT devices. Yeah. I knew it would come to me or something with them. But, you know, the other side of it is, what about the security of all this? I mean, how many people don't know about IoT devices that are communicating back to a server? Basically, 99% of people in the world don't know what's communicating back and forth today.
Well, another area I want to talk to you about, and I've got a book coming out on it actually next February. It's about artificial intelligence. Do your technologies make use of AI, or what are your thoughts on AI?
We are not using AI today. We are looking into it to see where it would be beneficial. Looking at aspects of the kernel level and in the system, and you know, clearly detecting malware. Again, we've always taken a position of it's not about detection with us, it's about prevention. So we re-engineered the books on, we redesigned how your computer works. When you use our guarded ID or our privacy lock, we redesigned how your computer, once data is created, transmits and carries that data. We redesigned all that. So, you know, whereas other people more on the defensive side or trying to, you know, detection side, we're looking at potentially AI solutions to also allow detection, but that's us is really a secondary. Prevention is a primary. You got to prevent it from happening. And like our stuff today, we don't stop the malware from getting on your computer, but we stop it from working.
Well, but don't you think AI could be used to help identify and predict future malware signatures like Bluetooth?
That's exactly what I'm saying. We are looking into AI right now and how it would help both us, the detection and the prevention. But with us, it's always about prevention first.
Okay, excellent. Now, have any of your clients, have they asked about cybersecurity insurance? You know, I mean, with video conferencing, obviously there's a lot of, you know, as you said, a lot of PII data that's going back and forth, other corporate confidential data. Have you been approached about cybersecurity insurance as a fail-safe in case they do fall victim to security breach because of a video conferencing attack?
Well, interestingly that you asked that. Our other technologies are actually a couple of our partners are currently working with some large brokerage insurance carriers, and where they're adding our technology to their for the insurance company to basically mitigate their risk of a keylogging or a malware attack or an authentication attack. So our products, our partners are telling us that they are being embedded into certain carriers right now. Now, we haven't approached anyone yet with our SafetyChat or Privacy Lock because we're just still in beta and we're just now get ready to deploy them. So, but it is something that is high on our radar to go and talk to some of these insurance carriers about our technologies and how they reduce the risk level of the client using it. We do think it will make a major impact because I think when your broker says, hey, look, for you to get this insurance, you got to use this technology, this way it helps mitigate their risk, right? And so we do think that that could have a very positive result to our top line sales. So we have some partners working with, as we speak, they're working with the carriers right now.
Okay, excellent. Now, George, as we wrap up our show here, I'm going to save, I guess, the best for last. How do you think the cyber threat landscape is going to evolve next year? You know, I mean, COVID's going to be around. We've seen huge upticks. And with the evolvement of a new cyber threat landscape, what do you think the biggest threat's going to be? And what do you tell people to mitigate that risk of becoming a victim?
Well, so there's the obvious, the education side, right? But unfortunately, there is a clicker in every crowd, as they say, and someone's going to click on something. And especially now with COVID, people are, they see an email, they click on it because they think it's something legit and, you know, get testing right now. Hackers are taking advantage of testing and they're putting up fake testing sites. Don't wait for 5 hours. Test site here. You click on a link and it infects you. So, unfortunately, the hackers are always ahead of the curve, looking at the lay of the land, what's going on, whether it's in the political world, politics, whether it's in the, you know, the social world, whether it's in the, you know, the pandemic, what's going on. They're always, taking advantage of people by deceiving them. But the other thing is this, Robbie, and this is important to know, as disciplined as a person can be, there are things you just can't stop, and you're going to get malware on your system. For example, a drive-by is where a hacker will malface a legitimate website. By the way, this happened a couple of years ago in New York City. NBC. So in like February of every year, this is like 3 years ago, NBC in February, they put out their sweeps. You know, they have sweeps weeks, February, March, and they show in the end of February all the latest shows that are going to be out, you know, in their fall semester. And on Channel 4 in New York, and they said, here, they show you, here's the the 15 new shows we have coming out. Here are bios, here are trailers, here's about the actors, here's the concepts, and you get to go and, you know, and pick, like, who you're going to, you know, oh, that looks like it's going to be a new great show and stuff like that. Well, hackers, what they did was the servers that NBC was on, the hackers exploited an Apache vulnerability on their web server. And what did they do? They put a keylogger on the web server. Now, as soon as you went to the web server, so as soon as you navigated www.nbc.com, instantly the exploit looked at your browser, exploited the browser, it was loaded with exploits, exploited your browser, and downloaded a keylogger before you even clicked on anything. So in that instant, the person didn't click on anything. All they did was navigate to a legitimate website that had been malfaced shortly before. I'll give you another one. Costco here in the Northeast, the big retailer. So it was about 3 years ago, four years ago. Costco, you know, they sell like Kirkland brands or whatever brands they sell. They were selling over the holiday, digital picture frames. People are buying them they couldn't get enough of them. And they're buying them for themselves, buying them as gifts. So you bring home a digital picture frame and you give it to someone, right? And what's the first thing they do? They plug it into their computer because they want to upload pictures to it, right? Well, guess what? The hackers found out who made those digital picture frames for Costco, and they did they breached that company, and they put a keylogger on a digital picture frame. So as soon as you gave it to someone or you bought it for yourself, as soon as you plugged it into your computer to upload your pictures, you downloaded a keylogger to your computer. How do you stop that, right? I'll go another one. HP, Hewlett Packard. Not only once, it happened to them multiple times. At one point, hackers actually breached their fortress and they put a keylogger onto a gold master of a USB stick. And they had made up all these USB sticks and they were being sold through Newegg, through Best Buy, through Circuit City at the time. So when you went in, you were walking down the aisle and you picked up a USB stick that's in a shrink wrap. You scan it, you pay for it, you take it home. What do you do? You plug it in. Bingo, it got you by plugging in a brand new shrink wrap USB stick. So the point is that the hackers are always going to be ahead of everyone, and they're always going to look to re-engineer the game in the game, right? They're re-engineering things that you wouldn't think about. They did it to in Tokyo, in Japan. The McDonald's Corporation, the hamburger place, was giving out like 1,000 MP3 players, very high-end MP3 players. A couple of years ago, they found out who the MP3 player was. They broke into their company and they put a keylogger on all the MP3 players. So as soon as you plugged into your computer to download your music, guess what? To upload your music, it downloaded a keylogger. So you'll never know.
Yeah, we're down to our last 20 seconds of the show here. So I just want to tell you, thank you so much for your time this afternoon and this morning. We look forward to having you again in the future, okay?
We appreciate it. Thank you so much. And stay safe.
Take care. Bye.